This is Barbara Glickstein, and you're tuned into Health Styles, brought to you by the Center for Health Media and Policy at Hunter College. You can find out more about the center at our site at centerforhealthmediapolicy.com. I'm here with Dr. Mary Chesney. Dr. Chesney is the director of the Doctor of Nursing Practice Program at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing. She's the current president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, the first professional society for nurse practitioners, and the professional home for more than 8,000 pediatric nurse practitioners. I'm interviewing Dr. Chesney in Las Vegas, attending the 36th Annual Conference on Pediatric Health. Welcome to Health Styles, Dr. Chesney.
Thank you, Barbara. It's wonderful to be here with you.
There are many things happening nationally around healthcare, and I know that you, as a nurse, as a professor of nursing, and as an advocate for children, adolescents, and families, and nurse practitioners, are at the helm of an organization that has been a strong defender of access to healthcare, quality healthcare, and continuing to fight for the right for nurse practitioners educated at the level of their education to be able to practice to the full extent of that education. So let's start with the nurse practitioner, since we're at the Professional Nursing Education Conference, and really help our listeners understand the function and role of removing obstacles to practice for nurse practitioners, and specifically we'll talk about pediatric nurse practitioners. So what does it mean when you talk about full practice authority for nurse practitioners, Dr. Chesney?
Barbara, full practice authority has to do with a movement that's going on across the United States to allow full practice authority for all advanced practice registered nurses, but in particular, today we're talking about nurse practitioners. And what that means is that we want state practice acts. Every state gets to determine their own regulations and rules around how nursing practice occurs. And we want every state practice act to allow for nurse practitioners to be able to do all the things that they are educated to do. So to diagnose, to manage illness, chronic illness, acute diseases, to be able to prescribe, to be able to provide health promotion, prevention for families. We want them to be able to have the ability to do all of those things under their own license without any types of restrictions or barriers put upon them by other professions. For example, in my home state of Minnesota, we used to have to, in order to practice, for me to be able to do what I know how to do and have been educated and trained to do, I needed to do that in collaboration with a physician. So I had to be in a setting that allowed me to collaborate with a physician. And in order to prescribe, I had to have a physician sign a piece of paper that listed all the drug categories I could prescribe. And what full practice authority does is to remove those types of restrictions and outdated modes of requiring physicians to supervise the practice of nurse practitioners. And I'm happy to report in our own home state, in my home state of Minnesota, last year we were able finally to pass legislation that allows us to practice in our own right, do all that we are educated and trained to do. The importance of full practice authority, it has a great deal to do with access to care. If we have places in our states where physicians do not practice, where we have shortages of healthcare providers, we really need to view putting providers, healthcare providers out there as an all hands on deck moment in time. And we believe that nurse practitioners can do about 60 to 80% of what physicians can do in terms of primary care. And it's important that we're able to be out in areas maybe that do not have access to physicians. Removing these barriers, allowing for full practice authority, is going to pave the way for increasing access to care and increasing the opportunity for people to have access to high quality care that nurse practitioners deliver.
Dr. Chesney, I know that you were one of the formidable leaders in the state of Minnesota that worked very hard in advocating for the passage of that law. And I think, although I do feel we're in a movement of a tide of things moving forward and more nurse practitioners, more pediatric nurse practitioners being present in communities, I would suggest that people are still somewhat uneducated about the role of the nurse practitioner in the primary care setting. Still not as bad, perhaps, as it was, say, even 5 years ago. Mm-hmm. So as you were educating the legislative body and lobbying for the advocating, were you struck by how uninformed our legislative makers were, the stakeholders that are holding on to laws that are antiquated, obstacles that are preventing access to care? And would you share a story of the aha moment, perhaps, when they figured out that, without maybe even naming that representative, because I think it's indicative in many states across our country, and of course to our listening, our public, who are, because of Health Styles, which is what you're listening to, my guest today is Dr. Mary Chesney, current president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, and we're focusing first on something very important, which is removing obstacles to full practice authority of nurse practitioners, and we really want the public to understand that it's not a fight just for the nurses, that it is, in fact, an advocacy work. It's advocacy work to really provide more access to care, of quality care. So as you have been on this important work, have you, obviously you've been successful. The state of Minnesota passed this law. So what did it take?
Took a tremendous effort. I will say it's something that didn't happen overnight. Certainly we worked for years in positioning ourselves, I think, in joining forces with others to build a large coalition. I think you're absolutely right, Barbara, when you say that the move for full practice authority isn't about doing something that's nice for nurse practitioners. The purpose of it is to increase access to care and to allow all providers, every provider should be operating at the top of their ability and training. In working with the legislature, you know, most of our states have citizen legislatures, so we have basic healthcare consumers among many of the people making decisions for policy in our state. I think we've been in such a medical model for so long in this country with the idea that physicians know all things in healthcare and that every other profession is perhaps just doing a little portion of physician practice. And that's really an erroneous view, but I think it's one that many people have. It's been one that's been, I think, fairly well developed over time, and it's just a viewpoint that a lot of people have. So we took great strides in talking with legislators about the fact that nurse practitioners and other advanced practice nurses are not just substituting for physicians. We actually are educated and trained with a different lens, a different perspective by which we work with families. And we have different strengths. And we see us as being vital to, for example, experts in health promotion, experts in prevention. The nursing profession really were the first to really focus on prevention and health promotion. We always look at families and patients in the context of their environments in which they live and work and play and go to school, and we realize that those contextual factors have much more part to play in whether or not they are healthy or they're struggling with managing a chronic illness, if you will, and that we have expertise in partnering with people, really getting at the heart of some of those contextual factors and helping them solve problems in their lives that are getting in the way of just doing simple things that could keep them healthy or help them better manage a chronic illness, for example. And we see that as being different than the way physicians were trained. We need physicians in our healthcare system because they spend a lot of their time in very complex diagnosis, diagnosing the people who are difficult to figure out what's going on with them or the unstable patient. And we as nurse practitioners really rely on working with physicians when we have a complicated patient that's a needed step is to refer them to a physician. But we would say that we definitely have areas of expertise where we feel we have more education and training in areas such as growth and development, normal nutrition, and this problem-solving type of approach to chronic illness that really gets at the heart of what makes chronic disease management difficult. It's those everyday family and contextual factors that get in the way. So I think one of the things we try to do with legislators is to say, this isn't a substitution, and it doesn't make sense for physicians to have oversight over a practice that we believe has a different, unique perspective to bring to healthcare. And I think that we also try to really point out areas where we have definite expertise that we think is beyond what physicians have exposure to in medical training. And I would say that the more we talked about those kinds of things at the legislature, the more people began to understand. But nothing was as beneficial as having legislators, some legislators, visit nurse practitioners in their practice, because I think they thought physicians were overseeing everything we did, watching every prescription written, that they were helping us come to conclusions and diagnosis about every patient and how to manage them. And when legislators could see and follow some of their constituents who are nurse practitioners, and they could see that, oh my goodness, all day long you are making these independent decisions all on your own and writing prescriptions all on your own and doing this phenomenal job in meeting the healthcare needs of these patients, I think that spoke volumes to many of the legislators who had opportunity to get out and see what our practice is really like. And I think that really helped to break down some of that kind of misperception that somehow physicians were required to oversee everything that we do.
So I mentioned just a moment ago that just last week, Nebraska Governor Pete Ricketts signed into law full practice authority for nurse practitioners, and Nebraska is the 20th state plus Washington, D.C., to have a full practice authority for nurse practitioners. Here we are in Las Vegas at the 36th annual conference on the National Association of Nurse Practitioners, where over 1,500 nurses and presenters are here to gather to hear from their colleagues for about the latest research and clinical guidelines, to discuss critically important things that are going on in the field. What are you planning on saying to this group to encourage them, for those nurse practitioners working in those states where they're struggling with these obstacles? What do you want to say to them, Mary? Because I hope they're listening, and if they're not listening today, the constituents in those states might be listening.
Certainly, we are sharing with our members that we are trying to ramp up, as an organization, the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, ramp up our efforts in helping to connect people working in the states to others, such as a person like myself, who's been successful in being able to push legislation forward and to try to give them some support. I think we also, I will be doing a presentation here at conference with several of my colleagues and talking about the journey towards full practice authority. And we will have, I hope, some good pearls of wisdom for our people who are going to be in attendance. But among the important pieces to keep in mind, it really takes a tremendous building of a coalition to move any legislation forward. Legislators do not like controversy. They do not like dealing with certain legislation that pits one group against another. And the only way that you can be successful in that type of a battle is to just have the numbers. You need all of the nurse practitioners in a state working actively, contacting their legislators, having their friends and family contact legislators, telling legislators how important full practice authority is to ensuring that their constituents have access to quality care. So, you know, I think that's one of the big messages, is you need to band together, you need to form coalitions, you need to get every single person engaged in the fight. I think the other piece that we want to say is we feel it's important to talk about what we do. We think it's important to do so in a way that's highly respectful, really demonstrates the respect we have for our physician colleagues. We disagree with their position on wanting to prevent full practice authority, organized medicine's view of that. But we certainly want to partner, be part of healthcare teams with our physician colleagues, and to be, I think, respectful, informative, to maintain great communication with our legislative members of our state legislators, our representatives, and just, I think it just takes a lot of work, a lot of communication, inviting them to your practice. I think those are the strategies that are successful.
I know another major area of policy, health policy advocacy that your organization and your members are involved in is very much related to the access and quality care of children, adolescents, and their families as a result of having access to care for their children. And I wanted to ask you what the current, what the status is of the Child Health Insurance Program authorization, known as CHIP, And also to reflect on a second bill, I know most of the reauthorization bills have been put forth by the Democratic Party members, but currently there is a Republican bill that has some concern in it. So first, let's talk about the reauthorization, where that stands, and what the position is of NAPNAP on that reauthorization.
The Children's Health Insurance Program, or it's often referred to as CHIP, has been such a success story in the United States since its first authorization in the late 1990s. And it's a program that takes care of children who fall through the cracks. They might not qualify, have family incomes low enough to qualify for Medicaid, but yet their families do not have the income to be able to afford insurance to cover their children's health care needs. If CHIP is not reauthorized, the Children's Health Insurance Program is due to run out of funding. The funding will expire as of September of this year. And the concern that we have is that we know that millions of children, should that reauthorization not occur, and should the funding expire, millions of children will lose their health care coverage, which has us deeply concerned. CHIP has been a wonderful program in that it really provides the children it covers with comprehensive health examinations, well child care. It deals with their health conditions and concerns, chronic health conditions. And it's a program that is affordable for families. So we are working with other partners, American Academy of Peds, the Children's Hospital Association, in trying to really connect with the congressional staffers and meet with congressional members about getting this reauthorized. Democrats have put forward several bills. Our organization would like to see CHIP reauthorized for a full 4 years. There's been some conversation in Congress about the potential of maybe changing CHIP and Medicaid over time, but we believe it'll take time to do that, and so until we have something better in place, we think it's important to fund it for 4 full years. The concern we have about a Republican bill that was recently introduced is that currently in CHIP, there are definite standards of care and certain things children must have so that they're getting comprehensive quality care. And in the Republican version of the bill, there's some concern that they're trying to remove what's called maintenance of effort. They're trying to chip away a bit at those standards and allow for more state flexibility, but we think possibly to the concern of children in the states not getting the care that they need. So we will be watching closely. We're hopeful that CHIP will be reauthorized at least for 2 years. We're hoping for four. And we would like to see a version in which it does not chip away at the really important quality standards that are in place for comprehensive care for children and teens.
I wondered about the reimbursement obstacles in Medicare currently for nurse practitioners and whether, so that's a separate question, but in terms of reimbursement through CHIP programs, are the reimbursements to pediatric nurse practitioners adequate? Is that another area that's under consideration? The fee structures are different than they are for physicians, and I know that that is also being looked at as another level of concern and needing to reevaluate the reimbursement structures.
Right. You know, Medicare currently has a policy, so nurse practitioners are reimbursed 85% of what a physician receives for the same service with identical outcomes. And so that's the Medicare rule. Oddly enough, I think people don't often associate Medicare with children, but we do have children who are covered by Medicare, children with chronic renal disease, for example, or children of families who have a parent with chronic renal disease qualify for Medicare funding. The important part about Medicare, though, is that it tends to be a gold standard by which many of the states set their Medicaid and their CHIP reimbursement levels as well. Because Medicaid and CHIP are programs that are administered at the state, and that's different than Medicare that's administered at the federal level, because of that, the reimbursement rates vary, so we don't have just one set rate that's used everywhere across every state. But in general, most of the reimbursement rates for nurse practitioners tend to still be somewhat lower than what they are for physicians for both Medicaid and CHIP. On a bigger issue, beyond just the nurse practitioner reimbursement issue, one of the concerns we have is that CHIP really reimburses quite well in the states to providers, whether that's a pediatrician or a pediatric nurse practitioner, for example. And Medicaid reimbursements in the states vary significantly. Some states with the Medicaid reimbursement low enough to really become a barrier for providers wanting to take, wanting to care for children who are covered by Medicaid. I will say that one of the things I'm most proud about with our organization and our pediatric nurse practitioners is when you look at the statistics and coverage of people providing care to children on public programs such as Medicaid and CHIP, nurse practitioners have a wonderful, stellar reputation of really stepping up and being there for children who are vulnerable, whose families do not have means, and being there to provide care. And I'm very proud of my colleagues in our organization for that fact.
I know that at this conference here in Las Vegas, the 36th annual Pediatric Nurse Practitioner Conference, where thousands of pediatric nurse practitioners are here to learn together, to present their latest research, their clinical findings, that there are many topics. I've been enjoying reading the titles of these topics and the vast depth of topics. I'm just wondering, as the president of the association, what do you hear of the real concerns for our children? Let's start with our younger children, mm-hmm. and maybe talk about adolescents from a health care and quality of health and life in our country today, Dr. Chesney.
Sure. I think one of the big areas that is starting to draw a lot of concern, not only from healthcare professionals who care for children, but even from business, industry, the Federal Reserve members, is that of our need to focus on what happens to children very early in their life, and about early childhood trauma, exposure to violence, abuse, neglect, children who live in poverty, children who face great stress. And we're starting to learn so much more about what that everyday exposure to toxic levels of stress does to the human brain when it's developing. And so I think that early childhood focus and trying to look at programs that help parents who are living in poverty and help them care for their children, maybe like the home visiting program sponsored through the Health Resources and Services Administration. A lot of people are paying attention to that, and I think we need to. We're finding that genetic gene expression, changes in the brain, are pretty significant in terms of looking at children who are living in terribly stressful environments versus those who are not. And some of those brain changes will last a lifetime. We also know children living in poverty, through studies that have been done, are much more likely to have a significant word gap, hearing millions fewer words than children who live in middle class and upper middle class families. And by the time that they are headed into preschool at age 3 or 4, they are so far behind their peers that some will never catch up. So I think one of the big issues of our time is going to be looking at how do we as a nation focus on the educational and the development needs of very young children, and how do we support parents and families to try to put in protective factors that will help to protect children who are living in stressful times and living in poverty. So that's one issue. I think another issue people are concerned about are environmental concerns. I think we have issues such as autism that we know has genetic links, but there are some who think there are environmental triggers that may be exacerbating children who already have a predisposition to certain genetic kinds of illnesses and developmental concerns. So I think environmental issues certainly are at the forefront. I couldn't let this opportunity pass to say that we have this big issue with the whole measles outbreak and the debate between those that choose to vaccine and parents to vaccinate their children and parents who choose not to. And I think that that's something that we really have to focus on is, you know, what is it that we could do to help reach families who are afraid? I don't think anyone chooses not to vaccinate their child because they wish to do harm. They think they are protecting their children. And I think it's time for us to drop name calling, but have
substantive conversations about how can we reach these parents who are frightened by all that they're hearing, and how do we reassure them that the benefits of immunizing their children so far outweigh any of the potential risks. And so as an organization that is very much in favor and promotes childhood immunization to protect our children, I think that's a timely topic that warrants our focus as well. So those are just some of the areas. There are many issues that we need to deal with, but I think those are some key issues.
I can see that from the agenda. Just because I have such an interest in technology and follow, I'm often report here on Health Styles, I did notice that there is a session on wearables, and since you are, since you use, you know, our teenagers and even younger are using apps on their smartphones and wearing Fitbits and encouragement of healthy behaviors through the use of technology, I'm sure that you, Dr. Chesney, in your own teaching and hearing about other practices, are beginning to have more of these conversations with families. Is it okay to use them? Should we use them? And I see that that's also going to be discussed here at the conference.
It is. I think that we know that technology has such tremendous potential for what it can do in terms of the applications that do focus on healthy behaviors that can be encouraging. There are applications out there now, apps that are helpful to children who have chronic health conditions such as type 1 diabetes or juvenile rheumatoid arthritis, and they're wonderful. I think that with that, we as a profession have a responsibility as well, though, to educate parents about misuse of technology as well. We also have a speaker that's coming to talk about cyberbullying. Our opening address will focus on that, and that's certainly a focus on technology gone awry in the hands of our youth. So we certainly are trying to get more information out there for our members, both on the absolutely positive, wonderful advancements in technology that can be put to great use to benefit children and families, but also in looking at issues such as, you know, screen time for children that we know is not necessarily helpful for their brain development, and also trying to look at those negative aspects and help guide parents in setting some appropriate limits around use of technology for their children.
I have often shared with younger friends who are new parents who raise, you know, those at every stage of being a parent or a guardian to a child, there are those questions that you have. And I often will ask them, are you seeing a pediatric nurse practitioner? Is there a pediatric nurse practitioner in the practice with your pediatrician? Mm-hmm. If your pediatrician is saying there isn't enough time for these kinds of conversations, think about seeing a pediatric nurse practitioner. It is a very different structured relationship and also model. That doesn't mean there aren't pediatricians, as you said, Dr. Chesney, but it's a qualitative difference. Mm-hmm. And regardless, any concerns that parents and guardians have who are raising children up, these are the kinds of questions that are very important as part of your health, the health of your child, the health of your family, and it's critical that we discuss them. So I want to thank you for raising such important ones when I asked you what's on the top of the list, and certainly violence in America is one that, as a public health nurse and here on Health Styles, we talk about.
Right.
So I'm glad. I'm just glad to hear that it's on the front burner in the pediatric nurse practitioner community, and I look forward to sitting in on that keynote on cyberbullying. I want to thank my guests. I'm here with Dr. Mary Chesney. She is a certified nurse practitioner, a fellow of the American Academy of Nurses. She is the director of the Doctor of Nursing Practice Program at the University of Minnesota School of Nursing, current president of the National Association of Pediatric Nurse Practitioners, which is the first professional society for nurse practitioners and the professional home for more than 8,000 pediatric nurse practitioners in the United States or globally?
In the United States.
The United States. We're moving globally next, Dr. Chesney. Thank you so much for joining me for this special segment of Health Styles here in Las Vegas, Nevada. My first time here, and I'm happy to be here with this important group of incredible providers of health care to children, adolescents, and families in our country. Thank you so much.
You are very welcome. It was a pleasure to talk with you today, Barbara, and welcome to our conference. We're so delighted to have you with us.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.